Serving the universe from the Martian capital of the world, Willow, Alaska. This is Mushing, brought to you by First Paw Media. Let's hit the trail.
I didn't realize when I was almost 50, becoming a musher for the first time, I was 48 years old, when I was in Nome and Mitch Seavey came in as the winner that year. And, you know, I talked about this before, the eyes say what the lips fear to speak. You know, he came in with his dogs and you look into the dog's eyes and his eyes and you think, man, where have you been? And wherever you've been, I need to go there.
You are listening to Mushing on First Paw Media. Visit our website at mushing.com.
Today, we're talking to Deb Glenn on our team and trail tour in Wisconsin. But first, here's what's new on mushing.com. We have an article about what dog mushing can teach us about patience, a podcast with a couple from McCarthy, Alaska. Additionally, we sent out issue number 201 to print. Now let's jump into the episode.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Mushing Podcast. I am Robert and I am sitting here in Lodi, Wisconsin with a friend of mine. Her name is Deb Glenn. She has been mushing for quite a while and I know that we did another podcast episode a little bit ago. We're going to talk a little bit about that in this one. But before we do, Deb, can you introduce yourself and tell us quickly who you are and what you're all about, please?
Hey, I'm Deb, Danny Glenn. They call me Danny, Deborah Ann. And I've been a musher for about 20 years now. And they inspired me so much that I wrote some children's books about them. And now I'm on an adventure to make a movie. So that's kind of what I'm about right now. We still have 15 dogs in our kennel, and we've got a little Klee Kai miniature husky upstairs, so that makes 16. We've got 3 horses and 15 feral cats.
Well, first off, you and your husband, Bill, were so gracious to open up your home to us tonight. A wonderful dinner here. We drove a heck of a long way here to get here today on the Team and Trail tour that we did in July. Thank you for that. A beautiful spot. We're sitting here in your kitchen area overlooking a beautiful lake. Tell us a bit about your farm, your homestead here.
We bought the homestead 14 years ago, and it has a lot of beautiful topography. It was perfect for training dogs. We've got a 20-mile loop that we enjoyed going up the hills and then down the valley and all around. So it's sacred. But, you know, Ben Logan wrote a book called The Land Remembers. And once you become part of the land, it just, the land becomes a part of you too. And so we feel peace here. And I don't know, the trees sing to us here.
It is beautiful. And for folks listening, this is sort of a mushing hotbed, especially in the dry land scene. There are a lot of mushers from this area. You guys could literally have a dry land event every week during the dry season, and of course in the winter, very popular as well. One of the better known clubs in the United States called the Wisconsin Trailblazers is located not too far from here. Is that right?
That's true. That's true. And I've never been a sprint racer, and I'm not brave enough to do any dry land work, but I have heard wonderful things about that group.
So I know that you were a distance musher in your day, and that's where your experience comes from. But my first question on this Inside Mushing podcast, we're going to jump right into this. What is your favorite race and why?
Oh, my goodness. I think the Race to the Sky, just when I thought I had seen the most beautiful land, the most beautiful part of the country I could ever imagine. You go around a corner and, well, it renders you speechless. I'm not kidding. You just when you thought you'd seen it all, oh, it's gorgeous, gorgeous trails. And I was warned about the Swingley Trail, the Swingley section of trail. And they said, man, if you can make it through that, you're going to be on home free, right? And I just, man, I mushed 50 miles. I got to a checkpoint. I was mushing another 50 miles. It was like, when am I going to get to this? Because I dreaded it, the whole darn race. I was dreading this section. They said, oh, you passed that a long time ago. So that's when I thought, okay, maybe I am a dog musher now.
That is awesome. And folks that may not know much about the Race to the Sky there in northern Montana, it is an Iditarod qualifier. It's changed a little bit over the years in terms of mileage and weather and all of that, but it's considered to be a tough race, isn't it?
Yeah, it was in the day, and then they took pause for a while because of the avalanche and everything. So, well, I'm getting old now, and I don't keep track of races like I used to. Boy, don't you remember at the beginning of the season when you're planning out your training, you know, you're planning on which races you want to go to, and you just get all jazzed up for that. I miss that.
I love the logistics side of it. That's a good part of mushing, isn't it? Just all that planning and getting ready.
It is. It is. You get to be a doctor. You get to be a lawyer, an Indian chief. You get to be a woodsman. You get to be all these different things because nature and the sled dogs require all those aspects from you. I mean, you have to be able to be strategic and cunning and, you know, all the different things that it takes. Well, you mushers out there know what I mean. And those that don't should.
Yeah. And we're going to jump right into the dogs. That's a big part of this podcast. We met a group of your dogs right here on your little farm. And if I remember what you said, you had dogs from 9 to 19
Correct. Here
with us. And I'm sure you could probably talk all night about stories about dogs. They all hold those stories for sure. But can you share one story about one of your dogs and why that dog is special to you?
Oh, my goodness. Boy, I think every musher thinks every one of their dogs is special. But one story just came to mind, and that had to do with Slaty Lady. Boy, that Slaty was something else. And I got her from a kennel in Michigan. So for a while, I was running the same trails with oh, goodness, what is his name? Ed Steelstra. Jeez, sorry, Ed, if you're listening. I love you, buddy. But anyway, we got a blizzard, and I was probably, I don't know, 30 miles from home. And I came to a bifurcation in the trail, and I had there was no way I knew which way to go. All of a sudden, I thought, you know what? Slaty Lady, she ran these trails. So I put her in lead. One of the other things that I did with my team was when we were about 10 miles from home, I started to call them up all the time. I trained them. That way they knew where they were going. Gosh, if you're just before a checkpoint and you know you're going to be there in about 10 miles, I could call up my team and they knew that they were going to get a rest real soon. So I had taught the dogs then that when I call them up like that, that means I want them to go home. So all I did was I said, all right, Slaty Lady, you know, she knew. I called him up. She took me home.
Excellent. I love that. Okay. Next race or question here, Deb, is tell us a story. You talked a little bit about Race to the Sky and coming into that checkpoint on the Swingley Trail. Tell us another story about one of the races that you participated in.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think goodness. So one of the races that I was going to do to qualify me in 2006, my rookie year, was canceled because we had lack of snow. I can't remember if that was the Bear Grease or if that was UP 200. I don't know. I can't remember anymore. But anyway, so I got this idea that I was going to load up all my dogs and go all the way to Washington State and run that race out there. Can't even remember the name of that race, darn it. But so there was a gal that I had met in Nome when I was up there, and she had run the Serum Run, and she knew a lot about dogs, and she had a dog truck. So I paid her to come and be my handler and to help me transport the dogs out to Washington State. And unfortunately, I was the first one out of the starting gate. So because it was snowing to beat the band, and my dogs were having to break trail. After they were breaking trail for hours and hours and hours, and I turned around. I mean, I saw no evidence of mushers behind me. And I thought, you know what? I bet I took a wrong turn, which I did. So the snow was falling in feet instead of inches. And we were really going up a steep incline. And I thought, you know what? This just isn't working anymore. The dogs are tired. The snow is so heavy and wet. I'm just going to rest for the night. Feet of snow fell through the night, Now I had absolutely no idea how to get out of there, where to go. There's no trail, no sign of anything. So I tethered my dogs to the trees and on snub lines and stuff, and I boiled snow for water and fed all my dogs and everything. And then the second night came. Search and rescue couldn't find me, and I couldn't find my way out. So that morning, I said a prayer to God. Do you ever make a bargain with God? Please, dear Jesus, if you get me out of this mess, I promise thus and so. So I made my promises, and it wasn't too long after that I heard a snowmobile, and I thought, now's my chance. So I only hooked up part of my team so I could hurry up and get the heck out of Dodge and kind of chase the sound, and long story short, I made it back. But they had canceled that race too. So it's easy for things to blow up in mushing because, after all, it's a dog race. So
yeah, and a lot of times you are out there just on your own, even though you're in a race or a pack, if you will, out there running on specific trails. It truly is a race against yourself a lot, isn't it?
It is. It is, absolutely. That's why what happens is you just get such a deeper relationship, that symbiotic relationship with the dog team, in that you both want to do what you're doing, but you need each other to do it.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. So I know that you are a history aficionado. You really like mushing history. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say on this one. Who do you think is the most influential dog driver in the sport now or was?
Oh, my gosh. Looking back, I have to say old Charlie Bowling. And the reason for that is, pardon me, Charlie, but, you know, you were an old coot back then, and I think that's the part I loved about you. You know, you just represented everything that the natives represent. If you read the book, Shadows on the Koyukuk, you can easily see through the stories that have descended through time all about the mushers, and I just think old Charlie exemplified that. I told you a story earlier how everybody pulled into a checkpoint and they all had their drop bags there. And Charlie had this frozen looking cylindrical shaped drop bag. It was the oddest thing and caught the attention of all the mushers. So he started to feed his dogs by putting a knife in, opening up his drop bag, and out comes a frozen seal. So then he uses a hatchet to feed his dogs. And the mushers were sitting around and saying, "Hey, Charlie, you know, what are you going to eat?" And he just smiled and took his hatchet and cut another piece. And that's about the end of that.
Took off a big old hunk of the seal.
Yeah. You know, that's the truth, you know. And your wife was talking earlier about the meaning of being a woodsman and the goal of becoming a woodsman of sorts, if you're going to be in dog mushing, how helpful that would be. And it's so true. And I think Charlie exemplified that too. Just a little bit of hatchet, a knife, and a lot of love. And he's just, you know, he lived on the land. He caught all the salmon. He dried all the salmon. That's the thing about mushers that live a subsistence lifestyle too, is you can tell that they do because they always smell like salmon.
That is true. We've been down that road before. Just a couple of more questions here on this short form podcast, Deb. Is I ask this question a lot on my mushing podcast, and it's really about perspective on what other people think about the sport. And I know that you're not in it as you were several years ago, but I'm sure you still follow it and have your finger on the pulse of the sport at least a little bit. But where do you see the sport of dog mushing in 5 years or 10 years? Do you see it growing, shrinking? Is it something related to climate, finances, sponsors? Where do you see sort of this ebb and flow of the sport in those two time periods?
Well, the ebb and flow is a rise and fall. Climate change has affected. I mean, I know people that are in fishing villages, they've had to pick up and move their whole village because of the flooding and everything because of that. I think about the money. Right now, we all know how expensive groceries are, and that goes straight to the $89 a bag for a small bag of good dog food. So, you know, for these young people coming up to try to be able to finance their sport, it's tough. But like any sport, I mean, people be be happy and rest assured that we can make it through this time, because after all, think about what a bass fishing boat costs. I mean, if you have a passion to fish, you're going to somehow figure out how to get that bass boat that you need or want, or a depth finder or whatever. And so I think it does have to do with passion. Well, how do we get that? You don't know what you haven't been exposed to. I didn't realize when I was almost 50, becoming a musher for the first time, I was 48 years old, when I was in Nome and Mitch Seavey came in as the winner that year. And, you know, I talked about this before, the eyes say what the lips fear to speak. You know, he came in with his dogs, and you look into the dog's eyes and his eyes, and you think, man, where have you been? And wherever you've been, I need to go there. The truth is, I was always meant to be a musher, but I never knew it. So I think our job, those that are in the sport of mushing, we need to pass this on through education, through experience, through giving these kids a chance to even know. And hence one of the reasons I went coast to coast talking about the character education books that are based on sled dogs, because they have so much to teach. And kids more easily resonate. Say if a kid's being bullied, they would much rather learn to feel okay about their experience or how to move on and so forth through the story of a sled dog that got bullied than if they go to, say, a human counselor in the school. So I think it's incumbent upon us to teach generations that are yet to come up in the ranks.
I agree with you 100%. And all of our listeners probably know that we recently purchased Mushing Magazine. Obviously, this is the Mushing Podcast. And it's interesting that we've reached out to a lot of people, Deb, and many of the younger generations will say, hey, I don't read anymore. I don't do this or I don't do that. What the heck is Mushing Magazine or something of the effect? We have to pass those stories along, don't we?
We do. They're so rich. They're just so rich.
Yep.
And that's what I think a lot of the kids are missing.
Yep. And that could go with anything, not just dog mushing.
Absolutely.
It could go with any type of activity or lifestyle or whatever. Okay, you may have already mentioned this, but if so, maybe you can reiterate just a little bit. But if you are talking to the person that's listening to this podcast right now, and you're trying to have a take-home message from your experience, and you have just a couple of minutes to sort of give that elevator speech or that take home, you know, that message, what would you tell them?
I would say, live pure, live your truth, expose yourself to a lot of things so that you can truly find out who it is that God made you to be. Get out there and don't be lazy, explore, be adventuresome, and but just, you know, try to be true to yourself. Yeah.
Be true to yourself. All right. This is Deb Glenn, otherwise known as Danny Glenn. Definitely check her out on the show links that we put below and learn a little bit more about her. Deb, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure to, you know, see you in the reels.
See you in the reels. All right, guys. On behalf of my guest, this is Robert for Mushing. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Thanks so much for listening to Mushing. I'm Robert Forto. We will have a transcript of this episode up shortly, as well as our top 10 highlights. To get this and other subscriber-only features, please consider joining Mushing Plus.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com. Find us on your favorite podcast platform, Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.